because they are so heavily regulated that they cannot make major decisions without a by your leave from Washington. As the size and scope of government have grown, so have the numbers of businesses petitioning the government. In 1956, the Encyclopedia of Associations listed 4,900 groups. Today, it lists over 23,000. Keep in mind that John Commons, a titan of liberal economics, believed that the proliferating influence of trade associations rendered us a fascist system nearly 70 years ago. Of course, not all of these groups are formal lobbying organizations, but they all work with or on government in some way. Meanwhile, the total number of registered lobbyists in the United States has tripled since 1996, and it has doubled in the last 5 years alone. As of this writing, there are roughly 35,000 registered lobbyists in Washington. From 1970 to 1980, when 20 new federal agencies were born, the number of lawyers in Washington roughly doubled to 40,000. These numbers don't come close to capturing the full scope of the situation. PR firms, law firms, advocacy groups, and think tanks have exploded across the nation's capital to do indirect lobbying of the press, opinion makers, Congress, and others in order to create a more favorable issues environment. When one of my lobbyist friends takes me out for a beer, he calls it third-party outreach. Corporations have long had Washington offices, but the tradition used to be that they were professional backwaters, the place you sent Ted when his drinking became too much of a problem, or where you let Phil diddle around until he reached retirement age. Now they are enormous and very professional operations. Between 1961 and 1982, the number of corporate offices in Washington grew tenfold. Salaries for corporate lobbyists have been rising exponentially over the last decade. In Nazi Germany, businesses proved their loyalty to the state by being good corporate citizens, just as they do today. The means of demonstrating this loyalty differed significantly, and the moral content of the different agendas was categorical. Indeed, for the sake of argument, let us concede that what the Nazi regime expected of good German businesses and what America expects of its corporate leaders differed enormously. This doesn't change some important fundamental similarities. Consider, for example, the largely bipartisan and entirely well-intentioned Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, celebrated everywhere as a triumph of nice government. The law mandated that businesses take a number of measures, large and small, to accommodate customers and employees with various handicaps. Offices had to be retrofitted to be wheelchair compliant. Various public signs had to be written in Braille. Devices to aid the hearing impaired had to be made available, and so on. Now, imagine you are the CEO of Coca-Cola. Your chief objection to this law is that it will cost you a lot of money, right? Well, not really. If you know that the CEO of Pepsi is going to have to make the same adjustments, there's really no problem for you.